As you can see, I'm going to go to 2 Chronicles, the 24th chapter, to introduce our lesson this evening. So you might want to turn there, but I have the charts on the screen. So let's introduce the lesson, and I'll say some other things. And what I want to do here is actually read some selected verses that I think will help set the stage for the topic that I want to talk about tonight. Won't read every verse, but it'll give you the general idea of the situation and the condition that existed at this time. Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. And Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Joash decided to restore the house of the Lord. So the king commanded, and they made a chest and set it outside the gate of the house of the Lord. Thus they did day after day and collected money in abundance. And they restored the house of God to its proper condition and strengthened it. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord regularly all the days of Jehoiada. But Jehoiada grew old and full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old at his death. Now after the death of Jehoiada, the princes of Judah came and paid homage to the king. Then the king listened to them. And they abandoned the house of the Lord, the God of their fathers, and served the Asherim and the idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this guilt of theirs. Yet he sent prophets among them to bring them back to the Lord. These testified against them, but they would not pay attention. Tonight I want us to talk about some things that the Bible says about the subject of influence, and I think the character that we just read about, Joash, of one who was both influenced both positively and negatively. Before we get into the sermon anymore, I want to say how much I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I want to say a good welcome to those of you who are visiting with us. I have my parents here tonight. I'm glad to have them. And there may be others visiting with us as well. We're glad to have you. I appreciate the elders giving me the opportunity. I certainly appreciate it and really thought Oscar's lesson on Peter was very good this morning. I think a lot of us can find things in the life of Peter that we can identify with. So I thought it was a very good application. Well, to understand Joash, it might be good to go back, and hopefully you can see this chart. It's a bit of an eye chart, but hopefully you can see. If not, maybe you'll remember enough about the kings of Israel and Judah. If you'll recall, you know, how did we get to a Joash is the question I'm trying to point out here. If you'll recall, Saul was the first king of the United Kingdom of Israel. He was unfaithful, so God took away his right to have heir on the throne, and he transferred that to David. He selected David because David was a man after his own heart. And David was promised an eternal kingdom, or one always on the throne. And when he died, his reign passed to Solomon. And Solomon is somebody that we'll talk about a little later as we get a little further along in our study this evening. He was unfaithful. And God decided to tear away a portion of the kingdom and give that to Jeroboam the first that we refer to him. And as a result of his unfaithfulness, we saw at that point a divided kingdom, one under the reign of his son, Solomon's son, Rehoboam. Of course, that would be the kingdom, the southern kingdom of Judah, and the other, the northern kingdom of Israel under the rule of Jeroboam. And we see this lineage now of David continuing to this day. Rehoboam, his son Abijah, succeeded him. Asa, his son, succeeded him. Jehoshaphat succeeded him, and he was followed by Jehoram, then Ahaziah, and then you'll notice I have a green mark pointing to Jehoash. We'll refer to him as Joash. One account refers to him as Jehoash. The other account refers to him as Joash, probably similar to the way we do Freddie and Fred, or Frederick, and probably they did that kind of thing too. So we'll refer to him as Joash, as he is referred to in the account in 2 Chronicles. So Joash is an interesting product. If you'll notice, there's a bit of merging of the lines. I think there's a, yeah, There's a merging of the family lines between these two kingdoms, right? Well, notice that there was a change in dynasty on several occasions in Israel. There is not a change in that of Judah. But Omri had a son named Ahab, and he married a Sidonian, daughter of a Sidonian king, if my memory is correct, Jezebel. Jezebel was a Baal worshiper. She worshiped idols. Here's the king of Israel marrying a woman who is an idol worshiper, and it had disastrous effects. Her influence was felt throughout the nation of Israel. Baal worship was instituted. Prophets of God were sought for execution by her, if my memory is correct. Well, they had a daughter by the name of Athaliah. Whoop, wrong button. Athaliah. And Athaliah, in a political alliance, I guess we could call it, married the son of Jehoram. His father's name was Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was a good king, but he allowed his son Jehoram to marry the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, that being Athaliah. Well, they had a child by the name of Ahaziah. Well, Ahaziah had several descendants himself, one of which was named Jehoash, or Joash, as we'll refer to him. Well, when Ahaziah died, Athaliah decided that she wanted to have power in Judah. So you know what she did? She started killing all the heirs to the throne of Ahaziah. She started killing her own grandchildren. Well, one of those grandchildren, of course, was named Joash. And Joash was hidden. Jehoiada was the priest at that time, and Jehoshabeath, his wife, actually took Joash and stole him away, I think the language of one of the versions says. And they hid him in the temple for a period of 6 years while Athaliah had usurped authority and became ruler over the land. 6 years. Think about that for a second. Well, at year 7, Jehoiada proclaimed Joash to be king. And Athaliah was executed. And there's a lot of details concerning how that all came about and how he brought a number of people to accompany him as they brought that out and as he brought out this young king, Jehoiada. Well, so Joash now, young king Joash, he begins to reign, and he reigns for 40 years. And as we noticed in our reading tonight, Joash was faithful as long as Jehoiada the priest was alive and present in his life. And we talked, and again, we noticed, he repaired the temple. The worship, burnt offerings were reinstated under his reign. But Jehoiada could not live forever. God allowed him to live to the age of 130, and then he died. And it was at that point, princes of Judah came and paid homage to Joash, and he listened to them. And they obviously led him into a path that had them abandon the house of the Lord, had them abandon true worship of God, and start worshiping idols. And God sent prophets, he brought wrath, tried to bring the people back, but they would not pay attention. God even sent Zechariah. Zechariah was the son of Jehoiada, in an effort to bring them back. Joash would not listen. He commanded for the stoning of Zechariah. He did not repay back the kindness that Jehoiada and his family had shown him. And as Zechariah was dying, he called out, "The Lord see and avenge." Well, that did happen. God allowed the Syrians to come against Judah. And Judah and Jerusalem were conquered by what is described as a much smaller Syrian army. Princes of Judah were destroyed. Joash even makes an appeal to Syria, to Syria by sending tribute, sending the treasury to try to keep them from from destroying them. And you have to kind of piece the two accounts. There's an account in 2 Chronicles 24 that we just read parts of. There's another account in 2 Kings, mostly in 12, I believe it is. So you have to kind of piece some things together. But we learn from both of those accounts that the princes were destroyed. Joash was severely injured, and then he was later finished off by his own people because of his disloyalty to Jehoiada the priest. And it says in death that while he was buried in the city of the kings, he was not honored as a king by being buried among the tombs of the kings. So I think it can be seen, and I think one thing that we can say, Joash's downfall was largely the result of who he allowed to influence him. He allowed those princes to lead him in a path of worshiping idols and then rejecting and hardening his heart towards God when God made an appeal to him to try to bring him back. He did not listen to the right people. He listened to the wrong people. He turned his heart against God. So if we think about the subject of influence, if I were to say to you, what's a passage about influence in the Bible? Most of us are probably going to turn to 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter. And that would be a good one to turn to. Probably the passage that comes to mind. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Some versions may say evil companionship corrupts good habits or good manners, but the idea is the same. People that we allow, people that we spend time with, people that we allow into our lives are likely the ones who are going to have the most influence on us. And we're going to look at some things that says that. There are some uninspired sayings that kind of match this as well. There's a quote or versions of the quote, different versions of this quote. Show me a man's friends and I will show you the man. Show me a man's friends and I will show you his future. I could not find who was the original source of that. A speaker by the name of Jim Rohn, and I don't know much about him other than that he was a motivational speaker of some sort. He said it this way, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. So I think we can see that both uninspired and inspired sources, writers, recognize the power of influence on our lives. So I think it's important for us to recognize that as well. Well, what I want to do now is to look at some various aspects in which we might be influenced. Because the Bible has a good bit to say about that, and we won't touch on everything that the Bible has to say, but we'll touch on some things. First thing I want to turn to is the idea or the influence of those who are seeking financial gain. The book of Proverbs is a book, if we were to say what's the book of Proverbs about, obviously the idea of gaining wisdom about how to live in life from a biblical, from a spiritual perspective. And the book actually begins as a father who is talking to his son and warning him about falling in with the wrong kind of people. And in particular, we'll go to this and read this. Well, we won't read it. We'll make some points out of it. We won't read all of it. But the father is warning his son to not fall into a crowd that would commit violence against the innocent or harm others for the sake of material gain. Look at verse 10 of Proverbs 1. If sinners entice you, don't consent with them. Verse 13, they may say, we'll find precious good. We'll fill our houses. Throw in your lot with us. We'll have one purse. Do not walk in the way with them. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Notice particularly verse 19. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. If we are motivated by greed, it may lead us to do a lot of things that we never imagined we'd do. And if we allow ourselves to be influenced and get into a life in which our pursuit is for material gain and greed, we may be influenced by the wrong kind of people and do things that we shouldn't. Or we might be put into a position where we want to, where we might be exposed to things that we shouldn't be exposed to, or be expected to do things that we shouldn't. We have to be careful that we don't fall into that kind of trap and be influenced by those kind of things. The New Testament warns us, 1 Timothy 6, let's look at that. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9. But those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves through with many pangs. And we have seen that over time. People get caught up in the pursuit of wealth and gain and political power, power and position within their careers. And before you know it, that kind of thing has become more important to them and they become unfaithful. Let us all be careful that we're not brought into that kind of influence. Next area I'd like for us to think about in terms of influence is that those with whom we have personal relationships. Proverbs 13 and verse 20, he who walks with the wise will become wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. And the Bible actually gives us some guidance, and this is not an exhaustive list, but there are certain kinds of individuals that we're to avoid in choosing our friends. Proverbs 20 and verse 19, whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with a simple babble. Be careful about associating with someone who is known to be a gossip, a babbler, a talebearer. Proverbs 4, beginning in verse 14, enter not into the path of the wicked, and do not go in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, pass away. For they sleep not, except that they have done mischief. Their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is a shining light that shineth more and more into the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. We need to be careful that we don't have our associations with wicked people. Keep going. Proverbs, the 22nd chapter. Avoid those given to anger. Make no friendship with a man given to anger. This is verse 20, chapter 22, verse 24. I don't know if I said that. Nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. Make no friendship with that kind of person who's known to be a hothead. You know, I've seen that kind of dynamic play out. Maybe in a meeting where you've got two competing sides and both have an interest in seeing their side win out. Sometimes those can get heated. One person gets heated, and all of a sudden the other person on the other side gets heated. Before you know it, their voices are raised, and that kind of thing kind of builds on one another. And sometimes you're hoping that somebody diffuses that. I saw that play out a couple of weeks ago in a meeting. It didn't have anything to do with me necessarily, but you could kind of see that kind of thing happening. It made everybody very uncomfortable. Avoid those kind of people. Proverbs 24, in verse 21, do not join those who do not I'm reading my notes. Don't join those who don't respect the Lord or civil authorities. My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not join in with those who do otherwise, for disaster will arise suddenly from them. Who knows the ruin that will come from them both? See this kind of thing playing out in American politics. And both sides, right and left, are guilty of this kind of thing. They're out to get the other, out to disrespect. They can find something one said, and they can launch on that and make a big story of it. And again, I'm not singling out one side over the other because I think they all do it. It's almost gotten to where it's a game to who can get the other on something they said. There's a lot of disrespect. Doesn't mean we have to agree with everything that our leaders do. We need to pray for them, but we need to respect them. And certainly we need to respect the Lord. There are various characteristics that we can see in 1 Timothy, the 3rd chapter. There is a list of people. Let's read this. This is 2 Timothy 3, beginning with verse 1. But understand this, that in the last days, and we are now in the last days, we have been since Christ returned, since the day of Pentecost, I should say. But understand this, that in the last days, there will be times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. We have to be careful about the associations we have with people who have these characteristics. But I do want to say this. I do not think this is telling us to close ourselves off from the world, cross our arms and defiantly refuse to do anything at all with wicked people. Instead, we are to reach out to people who have fallen into these kind of things. Jesus was accused of eating with sinners and associating with sinners. His purpose in doing that was to bring them back and to be faithful to God. That was His purpose. And that should be our purpose as well. So I don't want to leave the wrong impression when I say those kind of things that we just mentioned about avoiding people. There is another personal relationship that is extremely important to think about in terms of the topic of influence, and that is marriage. Closest earthly relationship that you can have is that of your spouse. There is no one likely to have as much impact on your spiritual life as the person that you pick for your spouse. That will likely affect your children's eternal destiny. Choose wisely. Make sure you pick a person, choose a person of deep conviction whose primary goal in life is to get to heaven and to help you get to heaven. Oftentimes, over the years, there have been people who get into a relationship with someone and they get so attached to them, they have a tendency to overlook their spiritual weaknesses. And those kind of things become more apparent later on after they're married. Choose wisely, decide up front before you get into a relationship with someone, before you start developing deep feelings, that this is the kind of person that you would want to marry. This is the kind of person that will help you go to heaven. So let's, for those of you who are marriageable age and still available, please do that. Please think about that kind of thing. From a marriage standpoint, we've already referred to this a bit. Consider the influence that Jezebel had on Ahab. I think I mentioned that she was a Baal worshiper. She was actually responsible largely for Baal worship to be done in the nation of Israel. She had a terrible influence on Ahab. She had a terrible influence on her children. She had a terrible influence on others. And the Bible makes a special point of this. It also makes a point about Athaliah. Remember, started to turn back to my chart. It's not up there, is there? The chart of the kings, that is. You think about the impact that she had on Athaliah. The Bible makes a special point of that. I wonder what they think about those decisions now. Think about the influence that Solomon's wives had on him. You remember that Solomon chose wives that were pagan idol worshipers. And he fell deeply in love with some of these women. The Bible actually makes that point. He clung to these women in love. Probably some of these were political alliances, but you remember he heaped up wives, something that the Bible said, the Old Testament law said for kings not to do, was the very thing that he did. And not only did he do that, but he chose women who were wicked and had a very bad influence on him. He went as far as to build places of worship for these women to worship in. And I believe there is even one account where he actually, to some degree, participates in that. All because of the influence that they had upon him. It's another example. It shows. And you may think, well, I will be strong and I'll be the one that that brings up the level of spirituality of the person I'm dating, the odds are you will not. Odds are you will not. If the man who had God appeared to him twice, the point the Bible makes in the discussion of this, God appeared to him twice. God blessed him with wisdom that was world-renowned, blessed him with riches. If that person can succumb to the influence of wicked people, then what does it say about us? Let us think carefully about who we choose for our companions. I think there are certain times in life that we may be more vulnerable to wicked influences that we need to think about. And some of this maybe is some of my own opinion of looking back in my own life and talking to others, but I think there are some biblical examples that we can show of this. I really think it may be, this won't be a 100% rule for everybody, but I think for a lot of us who have grown up as Christians and raised by godly parents to know right and wrong and to recognize wicked people, for a lot of us, we see wicked people, we recognize it, and we know to avoid it. But it is the people who have a lot of common characteristics to us, maybe of a similar background, may be the ones who have the worst influence on us at times. Think about these princes of Judah that had that impact on Joash. These would have been people from leading families of Judah. They would have been influential. They would have probably run in the same kind of circles that he would have run in. They are the ones who had the impact. And I want you to notice in 2 Chronicles, the 24th chapter and verse 10, you can read there, I'm not going to turn to it, but it makes a point that the princes were among those that were rejoicing when they were collecting these funds to rebuild the temple. They were right there in there rejoicing. They had a sense of godliness about them, yet they were the very ones who caused him to fall and adopt idol worship. Think about, and then going beyond our example of Joash, but think about the influence of Jonadab. You remember that story? Amnon, the son of David, fell into an infatuation type of love with his half-sister Tamar. He was unable to do anything about that because of that relationship. And he had a friend who was not just a friend, but was also a cousin, Jonadab. Jonadab was known to be a very shrewd man. And Jonadab helped devise a plot, or a plan, in which he could be alone with Tamar. And that led ultimately to the rape of Tamar. That led to the death of Amnon because Absalom killed him. And think about all the turmoil that resulted from that decision. Think about that. I wonder what Amnon thinks about that now. In his lesson this morning, Oscar brought this example up. The influence of the Jews on Peter. And I ran out of room, so I didn't have a lot of room to put the whole story there. But this is a situation where Peter had ate with Gentiles. Of course, by this point it was understood that Jews and Gentiles were alike before God, that God was not partial, therefore we shouldn't be partial. And before the Jews came into town, he ate with Gentiles. But when these certain Jews, prominent Jews, came into town, he withdrew himself and ate alone. He didn't associate with them because he was concerned about what that influence, about what how that would look before them. He was influenced by that. And not only was he influenced, but his influence impacted Barnabas. Some of the greatest characters that ever lived, being influenced negatively. That can happen to them, it can happen to us. Another area that I think we could consider, I think a time that we may be more vulnerable to wicked influences may be those times when we gain some newfound level of independence. What I mean by that is there may be times where Well, let me just talk about the, let me point out the example here, then I'll go from there. When Jehoiada died, and you think about the fact that God allowed Jehoiada to live 130 years, all that time he had to live and influence Joash. All that time he got to spend being influenced by him and learning truth and knowing what was right. Well, when Jehoiada died, he had to make a decision. He had to determine who he was going to listen to. Was he going to follow what he had been taught? Or was he going to listen to these princes? And of course, we've already pointed out what he did. He chose to follow his ungodly influences. So he was sort of at a new point in life. He had a newfound independence. It was up to him who to decide who to follow at that point. And I really believe if we examine our own lives, there may be times in our own lives where we have to make those decisions. You know, we grow up as little folks, and we're there with our parents all the time, and they're protecting us, and they're keeping us from being exposed to certain things and doing certain things. But as we gain independence, and we go off to school, and we age, and we go to high school, and we get a driver's license, and we don't have to be with parents all the time. We can be with other people. We have to make a decision about what kind of people we're going to be at that point. Times like going off to school and college, I think, is a very critical time. Be careful about people that you allow to influence you when you reach those times. When you leave home, maybe don't go to college, maybe just go off and leave and start working somewhere. Same idea. You're going to have to decide who you're going to follow. One area that I think we need to address, there's a lot of good that comes from digital media. Evangelism, we do that here. Edification, it's good that we can stay in contact, we can relay news about one another, see how everybody's doing. Something happens, we can get that word out. It's a good thing, but there are a lot of dangers. And I think we are very naive if we don't believe that digital media can have a very serious and bad influence on us if we allow it. Pornography has become an absolute epidemic from what I have read. Time Magazine, and Time Magazine would not be a site or a source that we would consider to be ultra-right-wing conservative. It would be very liberal, probably. Even they recognize, of course, they refer to it as a health crisis in an article. It is a spiritual crisis. And that is something that we have to fight and make sure that we don't fall into that because of the influence. Going down the road of looking at that kind of thing and downloading apps that put you in a position to see those kind of things may take you to it down a path you never imagined that you'd wind up and create desires that you never thought you'd have. Be wary of those kind of things. A lot of false doctrine is spread in digital media. A lot of speaking evil of rulers. We talked about that a little earlier. Gossiping. I see people kind of taking each other apart sometimes. On, and I don't know why I'm laughing about it. It's almost comical the way they do it, but it's sad. We have to be, we're naive if we don't think these things won't harm us and become a snare to us. Well, I think we've probably already seen following the wrong crowd. Joash certainly did that. I've made that point repeatedly. Look at what happened as a result of that. Those princes of Judah, they were destroyed. Joash severely injured and then finished off by his own servants. And he wasn't even honored in death like a true king. Bad company corrupts good morals. He started off great. He didn't end up that way. Let's not let that happen to us. Speaking of bad company corrupting good morals, if someone asked you what 1 Corinthians 15 is about, open your Bibles there if you have them and just glance at that. And I'm not going to ask you to say it, but I'd like for you to think in your mind as you open it up, if you had to pick one word of about what 1 Corinthians 15 is about, kind of wonder what you would think. And your Bible might actually give you some headings. You got it? resurrection. The topic of that chapter is about the resurrection. First, Christ's resurrection and the reality of it, and then subsequently our resurrection. Because Christ was resurrected, we have the hope of being resurrected, right? Does it seem a little odd to you, the placement of 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good morals, just kind of thrown into that discussion? If you read it and look at that context, I think the point that's being made here, we can take two approaches to this. We can decide that we believe in the resurrection, that there is an eternity, that we will spend somewhere in eternity. We are eternal beings, and we're going to spend in one of two places. Or we can take another attitude and follow a crowd that says there is no eternity. This is all there is. This is all life there is. Have fun, live it up, eat, drink, and be merry. This is it. And there are a lot of people who are living their lives that way. I think that's the context that he says, bad company corrupts good morals. They will lead you to a point that you don't believe in any of this. But I'll say this, if you do take that path, you're taking a path that has no hope beyond this life. None. Your only hope is that you'll be burned up, or your body will go away, and it won't, and your spirit won't exist anywhere. That's the only hope you have, because that's really all there is. There's really only one or two choices here. So what is your attitude toward life? Do you have a hope of living eternally? Do you believe in the resurrection? If not, or if you do, if you haven't done the things that God says to do to have that hope, we'll encourage you to come while we stand and sing.